What is this? Well, we're not doing verse 14 and 15, we're doing verse 16 and 17. Because 14 and 15 was done yesterday. So, you can just, we won't repeat the verse, we'll just read the verse in Sanskrit and English translation. We need a microphone. Quickly, please.
I think it's better if we give it this one.
No. Give him the other one, please. Okay, just read the Sanskrit. And I guess you can do the word for word. I don't know what is necessary. Just the Sanskrit and then the translation, please. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devam Saraswatim Vyasam. Tato Jayam Udirajet. Srinvatam Swakata Krishna. Punya Shravana Kirtana. Hidyantaksto Hyabhadrani. Virunoti Surutsatam. Nasta Prayesha Badreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavata Yuttama Shloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. Yeah, this is good because people don't come through. It's like a gate.
Translation.
Wait a minute. Let him finish with the disturbances first. Thank you.
As Krishna strolls to Raja with his lotus petal-like feet, marking the ground with the distinctive emblems of flag, thunderbolt, lotus, and elegant gold, he relieves the distress the ground feels from the cow's hooves. As he plays his renowned flute, his body moves with the grace of an elephant. Thus, we gopis will become agitated by Cupid when Krishna, playfully glances at us, stands as still as trees, unaware that our hair and garments are slackening.
Let's repeat that, please. Attentively listen and repeat kindly.
As Krishna strolls through Braja.
As Krishna strolls through Braja.
With his lotus petal-like feet.
With his lotus petal-like feet.
Marking the ground.
Marking the ground.
With the distinctive emblems.
With the distinctive emblems.
Of flag, thunderbolt.
Flag, thunderbolt.
Lotus and elephant gold.
Lotus and elephant gold.
He relieves the distress.
He relieves the distress.
The ground feels when the cow's hooves.
The ground feels when the cow's hooves.
As he plays his renowned flute.
As he plays his renowned flute.
His body moves with the grace of an elephant.
His body moves with the grace of an elephant.
Thus we gopis.
Thus we gopis.
Become agitated by Cupid.
Who become agitated by Cupid.
When Krishna playfully glances at us.
When Krishna playfully glances at us.
Stand as still as trees.
Stand as still as trees.
Unaware.
Unaware.
That our hair and garments.
That our hair and garments.
Are slackening.
Are slackening.
Purport. Here, Mother Yashoda is no longer in the company of the gopis who are confidentially describing their conjugal attraction to Sri Krishna. It is clear to the comments of Jiva Goswami and other acharyas that the statements in this chapter were made at various times and places. This is natural since the gopis were always absorbed in thoughts of Sri Krishna, day and night.
Om Agnatimirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuramilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Svapatam Tikam. He Krishna Kuruna Sindhu Dinabandho Jigapite Gopesha Gopika Kamparadaka Namaste Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneswari Vrishabhanu Sutta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Shri Radhika Prana Samam Kaniyasim Shakhi Shikshit Shoki Sostavam Lilami Tanuj Taritanga Madharim Anangapurvam Pramami Manjarim Vanchikopa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Patitanam Pavanivyo Vaisnavivyo Namo Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Shri Advaita Garadhar Shivasari Gaur Bhaktivinoda Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Shri Advaita Garadhar Shivasari Gaur Bhaktivinoda Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Shri Advaita Garadhar Shivasari Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So to offer my homage and respectful obeisances to our beloved Srila Prabhupada, I would like to first of all, before entering into any other discussions in relationship to the commentaries of our acharyas, as well as other subsidiary elucidations, I would like to read this same passage as it was presented by Srila Prabhupada in his famous Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, otherwise known as Krishna book. Another gopi said, "My dear friends, when Krishna returns home with his cows, the footprints of the soles of his feet with flag, thunderbolt, trident, and lotus flower relieve the pain the earth feels when the cows traverse it. He walks in such a stride which is so attractive, and he carries his flute. Just by looking at him, we become lusty to enjoy his company. At that time, our movements cease. We become just like trees and stand perfectly still, unaware that our hair and clothes are loosening." So this, a couple interesting, you can say, distinctions or differences between the way it's presented here by Srila Prabhupada in Krishna book and the way it's presented in the Bhagavat Shloka as it was translated by our BBT personnel. First is that in the BBT, in the Bhagavat edition, it mentions that that he relieves the distress by wandering through or strolling through Braja with his lotus petal-like feet. He relieves the distress the ground feels from the cow's hoofs. But in Prabhupada's presentation in Krishna book, he doesn't say the ground feels distress, but he says the earth feels distress. So there's some interesting points that could be brought out concerning this in relationship to the different opinions of our acharyas in their commentaries, which we will get into a little bit. And also the second point that I notice is that
He says in the Bhagavatam Sloka, he says that when Krishna playfully glances at us, but Prabhupada in his presentation in the Krishna book, he says that just by looking at him, we become lusty to enjoy his company. Whereas in the Bhagavatam verse, it is mentioned that thus we gopis who become agitated by Cupid when Krishna playfully glances at us stand as still as trees. So, of course, there's really no dichotomy here, no contradiction, although it appears that one is saying that they become lusty because of Krishna's glancing at them, shooting his Cupid's arrow-like glances as a javelin into their hearts, destroying their peaceful composure. But it says like that here in the verse, but it should be understood that the gopis would have never noticed unless they were looking at Krishna. So it is not wrong for Srila Prabhupada to make the point that just by looking at him, because just by looking at him, what do you expect? Because prema, or love of Godhead, or love, as it were, is a two-way street. Just like it is mentioned in the previous slokas, Hare Krishna, Jai Nityayor Hare Shyam Shri Krishna Balaram Ki Jai. It is mentioned in text number 12 and 13, how it is that when Krishna plays his flute, the trees and creepers become overwhelmed with ecstatic emotions. And just as the grihastas become ecstatic when they hear the approaching of a Sankirtan party, so similarly, and they bow down and want to offer, just like sometimes when we go on any Sobha Yatra program, which is the Nagar Kirtan through any village or town, then many times the grihastas, they will come out with chaj or with halava or various presentations. So they become excited and see a golden opportunity to increase their piety or their, let's say, good fortune by offering various enjoyables or relishables to the Sankirtan party for the pleasure of Sri Krishna, Hare Krishna, Radha Krishna, who has appeared, who is non-different from Lord Chaitanya, who has appeared in the form of the holy name, manifest in the kirtan performance. So, just as the householders do like that, so similarly, that transcendental sound of Krishna's flute, which is non-different from the sound vibration of the holy name in the Sankirtan performance, that inspires within the trees and the creepers of Braja a desire to bow themselves down low, offering their humble obeisances, with not just obeisances, but with a premic desire to satisfy the senses of Krishna by offering their fruits, their flowers, and whatever they have, their honey incessantly dripping from their branches, etc., and whatever they have. So, but it is to be understood, as we were expressing on one level or another, in the last, when I was commenting at the end of Ram Roy's class 2 days ago, that this is an indication of the gopis' actual feelings of separation and how it is that the gopis are appreciating, because Atmavan Manyate Jagat, that one has the tendency to see others in terms of his own disposition. So, due to prema and due to Vipralamba prema, based on their feelings of separation, which is based on their desire to be with Krishna always, day and night, the gopis express, or they appreciate their expression, or they, excuse me, they express their appreciation of the other devotees in other rasas, seva, because it inspires them, or it helps them to become more absorbed in an ever-increasing appreciation of their own, let's say, transcendental virtues in the matter of the principle of prema, facilitating Krishna's transcendental sense gratification. So, love is a two-way street. It is not only that the gopis are feeling separation, and that that their prema makes them desire to offer the fruits of their bimba fruit lips and the say various other types of fruits and flower-like fragrance and their tears of love, and also the pinnacle of conjugal expression in the matter of their transcendental tiredness exhibited in the form of perspiration drops, etc., in the course of their some yoga with Krishna. So it is not only that the gopis have the desire to offer, but seeing the prema of the devotees, Krishna naturally desires to reciprocate by offering his fruits and flowers and honey incessantly dripping from his tamal tree branches as such. So his fruits, you know, he has bimba fruit lips also. So he wants to also reciprocate with the gopis by offering the sweetness of his transcendental association to them. So this is an important consideration in the matter of understanding the transcendental loving exchanges between Krishna, who is undoubtedly the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the cause of all causes, the source of all material and spiritual worlds. We should always keep that in mind. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matat sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam. What is it? Buddha bhava samanvita. Buddha bhava samanvita. That with feeling, upon knowing how Krishna is the source of all material and spiritual worlds, that naturally, and that he is the summum bonum, that he is the ultimate reality, and that a relationship with him because he's Sadaishvarya Purna. No living entity in this material world can fully satisfy any other living entity's desires, because there's always some limitation. But in the matter of Krishna's association, in the course of his leelas, a living entity finds complete fulfillment. Therefore, our acharyas always advocate that we should try to fix ourselves properly on the path of pure devotional service, so that we might hope, by Krishna's mercy, to enter into a transcendental relationship with him by cultivating the proper swaruchi of the jiva in the matter of augmenting the vastu siddhi, or the perfection of attainment of the substantial Satchitananda Siddhadeha, or spiritual body, perfect body. Siddha means perfect, and deha means body. So the word Siddhadeha is not a taboo, really, as such, although some people want to make it out like that, that if you say the word Siddhadeha, but Siddhadeha simply means the acquisition or the manifestation of one's transcendental Satchitananda, original, constitutional, spiritual body in one of the primary rasas in relationship to Krishna in the leelas of the Lord. So it's important that we understand something about these things in order to fix up our determination and our attraction by understanding how Krishna is Sadaishvarya Purna, that he is complete in all opulences of beauty, knowledge, wealth, strength, fame, and renunciation or independence. Because people become attracted by being associated with someone who's famous, or someone who's beautiful, or someone who's wealthy or opulent in some way. So in this way, it may be understood, should be understood, that by fixing ourselves up in a transcendental relationship with Krishna via media, the process of bhakti yoga, which is, which culminates ultimately in the jiva's original eternal occupational activity of chanting and absorption by meditation in the transcendental name, form, qualities, and pastimes of Krishna. Did I finish the sentence? Hare Krishna. So anyhow, I think that is because we have with us the commentaries which the BBT have translated, the devotees on the BBT staff have translated from Sridhar Swami and Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. There's some interesting points which are not at all touched on in the purport here. It's such a short purport, but there's so much more which has been discussed by our charges, that I think that it's useful at this juncture to take a look at the charges purports. Now, one thing that may be said about this is that even if we have read the charges purports one or two times in the past, there's no cause for becoming disinterested by hearing it again. Because if we hear it again and again and again, just like with the hearing of Bhagavat, the idea that we become disinterested means that we're hearing from the material platform. We shouldn't become disinterested by hearing again and again and again. But rather, material platform means because we think that we've intellectually grasped the idea or understood it, so therefore let's move on to the next thing, which will be of some further interest or some new delight as such, because I've already heard it before. But we can hear Bhagavad Gita in Srimad Bhagavatam again and again and again and derive new light with every reading or with every hearing of the subject matter. So similarly, just like you were admitting, Purnachandra was admitting to me yesterday, that he has read some things, but he didn't happen to notice, you know, some things that we were discussing, and the very same thing that he'd read, you know, who knows how many times before. So in the same way, new things may come to light with repeated reading of the Acharya's commentaries as well. So don't feel any distress in your heart, but you should feel happy that we're having the opportunity to discuss these things in the Sadhu Samela and give your merciful support. So Sridhar Swami comments. These are some very interesting comments, so please listen attentively and we'll try to further discuss the things from the teachings of Bhaktivinoda Thakur as well. What can be said about our bewilderment? This is what the gopis are saying. This they describe in the verse beginning with Nija Padabja Dalai, that's verse 16. By those feet which had such variegated marks as the flag and so on, these feet of his were themselves just like lotus petals, and by them he was relieving the earth's pain caused by the passing over of the hooves of the cows. That Krishna, who with his body, just like an elephant, or in other words, whose movements were like that of an elephant, while playing his flute, walked in the land of Braja. This is his comment on text 16, and now commenting on text 17, he says, for that reason, who are experiencing, for that reason, we who are experiencing the agitation of Cupid, which has been placed upon us by his playful glances, have attained the state of having the movement, or in other words, lack of movement, like the trees. Thus, out of bewilderment, we do not recognize either the garments or the garlands in our hair or our garments. We don't notice because we're bewildered by the agitation of Cupid, which causes us to be fully absorbed in thoughts of Krishna's transcendental handsomeness, etc., and the hopes and aspirations and desires to be associated with that handsomeness via media transcendental loving service. So the he's basically just reiterating the shloka. So Jiva Goswami further comments. He says, and then once again we find the gopis assembled in privacy, as is required by the confidential mellows of the pastimes which occur after those mentioned above. Thus, though they had passed the time in hearing so many different topics about him, still even after 3 yamas or 9 hours, Sri Krishna had not come. And so, shows how it is that the conversations in this chapter are being taken from different times, places, and circumstances. So, because they were passing the time in Mother Yasoda's company in the previous verses, but now they're referring, they're discussing an incident which happened upon 3 yamas of time, or 9 hours, having passed, and Sri Krishna had not yet come back from the pasture grounds. So Madhya Soda was becoming full of anxiety. And in further later verses, they go back to a discussion with Madhya Soda to pacify her by explaining to her that why are you in anxiety? You know, you shouldn't be distressed, but you should be elated or happy, knowing that the reason why your son is delayed is because he's being, let's say, bothered, so to speak, by so many demigods who are coming to offer their prayers and offer their various glorifications. So your son is so wonderful, you know, that even great demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva and Indra, Chandra, they are coming to offer prayers to him. So, you know, it's not, you know, a wonderful, I mean, it's not it's not that you should be feeling distress, but rather you should be recognizing that your son is not an ordinary person. It's not an ordinary person who is being approached by demigods like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. So therefore you should feel happiness in realizing that your son is such a wonderful and powerful personality, instead of feeling distress on account of his delay. So here, there's mention of how, in the course of this delay, after 9 hours of hearing and talking, sometimes devotees find some little fault in the fact that sometimes Aindradas, yours truly, spends as much as 3 hours discussing Krishna Katha in the Bhagavatam class, or let's say extended discussions thereafter. But we should see that this is the nature of Krishna Katha, because Anandam Buddhivardhanam, although we have other important services to do, etc., but Krishna consciousness actually culminates in such discussions about Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes in an atmosphere which serves to augment our feelings of separation. Because Krishna consciousness culminates in shedding tears from the eyes. It can actually culminate, just like is described in Gopi, in Venugita, how cows and the calves, that especially the calves, is mentioned, how they were shedding tears from the eyes. And why they were shedding tears from the eyes, it is mentioned by Srila Prabhupada in the Krishna book, that this demonstrates how they were embracing Krishna heart to heart. So he goes further to say that the cows and the calves and other living entities in Vrindavan, that even they know the art of embracing Krishna heart to heart. You know, so here we are, as, of course, they're not ordinary cows or ordinary living entities, so something should be understood about that, which we won't get into right now. But here we are, we're, you know, exalted human beings, you know, which is the best of all births in the whole universe, because we get to take birth on the planet Earth, and we get to come to Brajabhumi. We have greater access, you know. But the question is that are we, is our Krishna consciousness culminating in shedding tears from the eyes? Are we actually learning how to cry for Krishna? So that means that, what does crying for Krishna mean? It means that there should be some anxiousness, some desperation, some intense hope and aspiration to achieve the perfection of devotional service in the matter of going back to Godhead and actually meeting Krishna, seeing Krishna face to face and eye to eye. So these discussions, just like it is described here, whether we're discussing in the Bhagavatam class, following in the footsteps of the gopis, you know, for 3 hours. Why 3 hours? You know, each verse of Bhagavatam could be discussed for a minimum of 10 to 15 hours, at least 9 hours. The gopis are demonstrating how it is that they're discussing, you know, Krishna Katha for 9 hours, waiting for Krishna in the house of Mother Yasoda. But then some of them become very anxious, and they go out to search for Krishna. They search after him at the time of Krishna's turning the cows back, or returning the cows back from the forest, taking the pretext of going out to collect flowers and so forth. So I'm back into Jiva Goswami's commentary. So they're taking the pretext of collecting flowers and so forth for worship of the sun god or whatever, whoever, Durga Devi sometimes, sun god sometimes, Lord Shiva sometimes. So going out to collect flowers, which is, let's say, an excuse for being able to leave the house and enter into the forest. And then once they're away from the superiors, then they take the opportunity to search for Krishna. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? So this was on some other occasion that they went out into the midst of the forest, and what they saw when they are now relating on a later day. The idea of the verse is introduced as follows. O intimate friends, so much for all these different descriptions of the bewilderment of others, just like they were, as we were discussing, they were admiring, appreciating, or even in certain respects envious of the bewilderment of the trees who get to go along with their husbands, the creepers who get to go along with the husbands, the trees, etc., or the deer, you know, who get to go along with their husbands to the side of Krishna. They get the trees get to offer their everything. The creepers, which are the wives, get to offer their everything along with their husbands, the trees, like that. And there's no objection on the part of the trees. The trees bend down low, you know, offering their respects to Krishna. But when the gopis went to meet with Krishna, their husbands are not very happy. So they feel some remorse on that account, that how it is that these others, they get to meet with Krishna. They get to offer their everything, their fruits, their flowers, and the honey incessantly hanging from the branches. We want to do the same thing. We want to offer our everything to Krishna. But here we're stuck, you know, cheating our, you know, trying to make our superiors and our husbands think that we have any regard for them at all, like that, you know, until that opportune moment when we can, you know, sneak away on the pretext of collecting flowers to go look for Krishna. So, like that, the idea of this verse is introduced as follows. O intimate friends, so much for all these different descriptions of the bewilderment of others. Just hear how we are most definitely bewildered ourselves. Thus beside themselves in ecstatic feeling, the gopis speak the two verses which are presently under discussion, beginning with Nija. The word Nija expresses the exceptional nature of the markings And the plural form of the word expresses great respect. They want to express the unprecedented beauty of each and every mark. The word Dalai is used here as a reference to the ground. Here's Jiva Goswami's idea. So here's where this idea of he relieves the distress the ground feels, in contrast to Prabhupada's presentation in the Krishna book, where he says the earth feels. So Jiva Goswami is taking the lie to mean ground, whereas Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is taking the word to mean Mother Earth, the personality, Bhumi Devi. So he's saying that the word Dalai is used here as a reference to the ground within the land of Braja. That is to say, because the ground doesn't mean just ground, but there's blades of grass, etc. The blades of grass and other plants that are found on that ground, pacifying the distress of the blades of grass and other little plants, which is caused by the hoofs of the cows and other animals. When Sri Krishna passed by after the cows, and the cows are going forward ahead, Jyoti Jyoti Gaya, Jyoti Jyoti Qual, you know, Agi Agi Gaya, you know, you know this song. So Agi Agi means ahead, but the cows are going ahead. So here's the authority for that song's ideas, that Krishna's passing over top of the grasses and other little plants after the cows have trampled the poor little creatures, you know, with their sharp hooves. Have any of you ever been stepped on by a cow? You know, if you're around cows or kicked by a cow or something, you know, sometimes I've had my foot stepped on by a cow, you know, and it smarts rightly, you know, so we can imagine how much pain the little blades of grass must be experiencing when the cows, you know, are traversing. Of course, the cows are great devotees. So in some ways, it may be said that, that the lotus feet of the devotees, or the worship of the lotus feet of the devotees, is higher, and therefore should be a cause of greater, you know, ecstatic feelings. But pain and pleasure, you see, because sometimes devotees' association is more painful, let's say, than Krishna's association. If we're worshiping the deity, you know, everything is hunky dory and nice, and we're happy and everything worshiping the deity. But when we come out, you know, and a devotee lambasts us for some idiosyncrasy in our behavior or whatever, and then we begin to understand, you know, what is the nature of Krishna's causeless mercy in the form of the chastisement of our gurus. So in this way, we can see that the gurus are giving us pain, but the purpose of that pain, you know, is to make the happiness of Krishna's association, and the ultimate issue is to make the happiness all the sweeter. You see, so without knowing pain, you know, the austerity of the discipline, let's say, imposed upon us by the devotees of Krishna, especially with reference to the Acharya Parampara, how they're teaching by example and instructing us in ways that may be painful to us because of our various attachments, you know, to the material conditioned life. it may be difficult or painful for us to give up those attachments or the desire. Just like one time my godbrother Vaisheshika, he advocated that we should get out of our comfort zone, you know, and go out on book distribution, put yourself on the line, take a risk for Krishna, you know, go through the trouble, you know, to help others, etc. So that instruction may, just like I remember, you know, being kicked out of the Sankirtan van onto the parking lots, you know, it was painful, you know, being forced, you know, by authority. You know, anyone who has to surrender to any superior authority, you know, is to be expected that he's going to experience some pain. But that pain, you know, makes us advance in Krishna consciousness, which helps us to have the adhikar to actually perceive the beauty and sweetness of Krishna as he is, and the beauty and sweetness of Krishna's leelas. So anyhow, that comes later, usually. A little later, you know, after the cows are traversing the ground of Braja and trampling and giving pain, you know, the devotees are giving pain to the other devotees, little leaves and grasses. So then Krishna comes along, and what happens when Krishna comes along? He says that counteracting the pain caused by the passing over of the hooves of the cows who are moving forward in front at the time of returning to the cowherd village, when in order to thus subdue the earth's distress. Oh, excuse me. How did this happen? Oh, I'm reading Vishnu's. Oh, because Krishna's passing after the cows. Okay, so by the natural effect of the touch of his lotus feet, immediately the grasses and sprouts grew up again. Immediately they become enlivened and full of pleasure by realizing Krishna's association or the touch of Krishna's lotus feet. Now, thus it is implied that there must have been countless herds of cows being grazed there. So that's the end of Jiva Goswami's Charanamrita, what are you doing? Stop it. Please put it away. Dumbbell. So here we have Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. And this is also quite nice. Then, to those of their girlfriends who were standing in other groups, they described how the sound of the flute caused their own bewilderment. His feet are themselves lotus petals, by them which had the variegated marks of the flag and so forth. Counteracting the pain caused by the passing of the hooves of the cows who were moving forward at the time of returning to the cowherd village, when in order to subdue the earth's distress by placing his own lotus feet upon her, so this shows that we're talking about the earth, but taking the earth in terms of her personified form as Mother Bhumi, or at least associating the earth planet as being a form of hers. So therefore, she, through her, globular manifestation as the earth planet, is is feeling pain or being relieved. She's feeling pain from the cows traversing. And she's being, let's say, again, gratified in order to subdue the earth's distress by placing his lotus feet upon her. He, Krishna, whose movement with his transcendental body is like that of an elephant, walks on in the land of Praja. So this is an interesting point that could be brought out here also, is that if the cow's hoofprints are feeling pain, are creating pain for Mother Earth, then how much pain she must be feeling, you know, by nuclear blast and other such things which are going on, you know, digging in her ground to make foundations for buildings and all these things. And the cow's earth, the cow's walking on her is hardly as painful, I would think. Especially because these cows were at least devotees of Krishna in the land of Braja, in Brajabhumi. But turner rockers and bulldozers and nuclear bombs and all these things, you know, they're usually run by demoniac people, you know, so it couldn't be giving her very much pleasure. So how happy she is when Krishna makes his divine descent and does his leelas, thus touching her with his lotus feet. At that time, we experienced the agitation of Cupid. Another thing that could be brought out here, which is an important thing, I think, is that here we see a description which is quite different. The gopis are separated from Krishna. They're feeling separated from Krishna. And they're desiring to be with Krishna. And they're in anxiety because he's coming home late. So they go out to meet with Krishna, etc. And they're standing, let's say, later, on a later day, discussing these things in privacy, in which they get to express their conjugal feelings to each other, comparing notes, so to speak. But this is quite a different atmosphere than what we see in Gopi Geet, where the same thing, Krishna's out, here Krishna's out in the pasture grounds, and in Gopi Geet, we find that they're expressing their separation, feelings of separation, in quite a different way. Now they say, the dear master, dear lover, when you leave the cowherd village to herd the cows, our minds are disturbed with the thought that your feet, more beautiful than a lotus, will be pricked by the spiked husk of grain and rough grass and plants. And then, in a subsequent verse in Gopi Geet, in the last verse, in this is text 19, they say, the gopis say, oh dearly beloved, your lotus feet are so soft that we place them gently on our breast, fearing that your feet will be hurt. Our life rests only in you. Our minds, therefore, are filled with anxiety that your tender feet might be wounded by pebbles as you roam about on the forest path. So here in this section, we see that the gopis are expressing their concern for the pains and pleasures of Krishna's lotus feet. They're saying that that If you're going to place your lotus feet there, you know, then there's every chance that you'll experience pain. How could you experience anything but pain? They're thinking because they know the super excellence of their transcendental loving service. And as the topmost embodiments of Ladini Shakti, which is the pleasure-giving potency of Krishna, the gopis know very well that Krishna could not be feeling as much pleasure by traversing the ground of Braja, where there are sharp grain husk and dry grass, you know, and etc., which might prick his feet. They're fearing these things, but what they're really saying is that why are you placing your feet there? You know, don't you know that there's better places to place your feet? In other words, it may be said that the just like in Venugit also, they say how fortunate is Govardhan Hill, because Govardhan Hill is having the footprints of Krishna, the touch of Krishna's lotus feet, and Balaram's lotus feet, because they're accustomed to walk on Govardhan Hill. But they're saying, because this is also a chapter which is giving expression to Purvarag, which is another type of Vipralamba, or feelings of separation, why are you so accustomed or interested to place your feet on Govardhan Hill? You know, what to speak of grain husk and sharp grasses, etc., which might prick your feet. You know, those are hard stones, you know, and what, you know, what they're really saying, how fortunate is Govardhan Hill, but it's an expression of transcendental envy that how does Govardhan Hill, you know, could merit, you know, we think that our breasts are hard, you know, and that they might give pain to Krishna if he places his soft lotus petal like feet upon them, you know, but this hard old Govardhan Hill, you know, fortunate is kind of almost tongue in cheek. That yeah, he's fortunate, just like the flute is fortunate, because actually the nectar of the lips of Krishna belongs to us. So similarly, his lotus feet belong to us. Why is he placing them on Govardhan Hill? Are there not better mountains, you know, to place his lotus feet upon? You know, so there's mountains. You know, so similarly, we have to say that here in Gopi Geet, the gopis are giving expression to an anxiety that Krishna's feet, you know, couldn't possibly be feeling as much pleasure, you know, by traversing the land of Braja, you know, wherein there's, of course, they're not taking into consideration that the Chamri deer have swept with their bushy tails the paths of Braja, but as a service to Krishna, to make sure that his lotus feet are not pained. But still, they're saying that even if they have swept the pathways and there are no brambles and sharp grasses and grain husk, you know, to prick his feet, you know, still, he could not possibly be experiencing as great a pleasure in the association of that which is a manifestation of the Shantaras than what he could experience in his association with us, who are the embodiment of Kevala Madhurya. So in this way, we can see that there's some difference that in Gopi Geet, here the gopis are concerned with the lotus feet of Krishna, the pleasures and pains of the lotus feet of Krishna, whereas in the present verse, we're seeing something which is a little different. The gopis are not giving expression to a consideration of Krishna's pleasure, but rather they're considering the pleasure and pain of Krishna's devotee. In other words, Mother Earth is a devotee of Krishna, or the grasses, as it's described here, and little plants, they're all, because all living entities in the land of Braja are all devotees of Krishna. So they're thinking, they're not thinking that the lotus feet of Krishna are going to be pained, but rather they're thinking that the grasses will be, blissed. Rejuvenated, jubilated, if there is such a word, by the touch of Krishna's lotus feet. They're not at all thinking that Krishna's feet are going to be pained. At least they're not giving expression to it. But rather, they're thinking that the grasses have suffered, you know, in the feelings of separation from Krishna, you know, which is marked by the footsteps of other living entities other than Krishna, such as cows and, as is mentioned in the purport in the commentary, other animals as well. So these cows and other animals, they are paining Mother Earth, you know, because she's not realizing, at least at that instance, the pleasure of Krishna's footprints. So the gopis are giving expression to the idea that just as Mother Earth is experiencing distress upon the separation of Krishna, and she's relieved of that distress, revived, pleased by the association of Krishna, the immediate touch of his lotus feet. So similarly, they're expressing their own bewilderment that we also, just as Mother Earth is feeling distress, so they're indicating their own distress and feelings of separation, and they're expressing their desires to have their distress relieved by the touch of Krishna's lotus feet upon themselves, that just like Mother Earth will feel relief from the pains of separation by the touch of Krishna's lotus feet, so we will also feel relief from our pains of separation by the touch of Krishna's lotus feet. It's a more direct, expression of their own desire for the touch of Krishna's lotus feet, although expressed somewhat indirectly. So, just like as we were discussing yesterday, we won't discuss that. So anyhow, now Vishwanath will speak upon about text 17, wherein he says, at that time, we experience the agitation of Cupid placed upon us by Sri Krishna with his playful glances, and we achieve the motion, that is to say, the motionlessness of trees. Thus, out of bewilderment, we do not recognize the garlands in our hair or our garments. That is to say, we do not notice that they are slipping. This indicates that the Lord pacified the distress of the earth caused by the animals' hooves by placing upon his lotus feet. But for the beautiful-browed ladies of Braja, he created distress within their minds by laying upon them his lotus eyes. This is our bad fortune. The gopis are implied as thinking. So they're saying here that Krishna has relieved Mother Earth by awarding her the touch of his lotus feet. But he's creating the pain of increased anxiety of a desire to have his company in us by his sidelong glances, by which he arouses cupidity in them for the service of Krishna. So they're saying here that it can be understood that they're saying that it's very nice that he's placing his glances upon us. That's very nice, because it's like a Cupid's javelin, like arrow, into our heart, creating pain of intensified distress, distresses to do the prema seva of his transcendental senses. Why is it that he's placing his lotus feet on Mother Earth? Do you think Mother Earth, is of a higher category than us? Do you think that he's getting more pleasure by associating himself with Mother Earth than by associating with us? Or why is it that he's considering, her pain and pleasure, but he's not considering our pains and pleasures? What we're really trying to say is that it's very nice that he's relieving Mother Earth of her pains and pleasures by the touch of his lotus feet, but we also want the touch of his lotus feet. And therefore, in this way, they're giving expression to their heart's desires for conjugal union with Krishna. That is the nature of the Samartha Rati, which is the mainstay of the conjugal mood in the realm of Braja. Ujjvala Nilamani mentions, instructs, that there's no perceivable distinction between Samartha Rati and the desire for union with the beloved Lord Krishna. So that is in the matter of the cultivation of the conjugal rasa or shringara rasa, madhurya rasa. These things should be understood, that there are distinctions. It's not so easy at a casual glance, and that's the problem when the materialist will or those who are bent on material sense gratification will hear these pastimes, is they don't understand the thing. Just like they will say that they can't penetrate, and actually relish, because it's just like when they see that a devotee's eating and they're eating, so they say that, well, we're eating and you're eating, so what's the difference? So eating is the same, but the consciousness behind the eating is so much different, that you're after money and we're after money, so what's the difference? So they're after money for their personal sense gratification, and the devotees are after money, or they should be after money, at least it should be said, I think, without say breaching any Vaishnava etiquette. They should be after money for the service of Krishna. Just like one time, I think it was Maharishi Maharshi Yogi was shown as rejecting a attaché case with $1 million worth of dollar bills in it, you know, saying near mama like that. But nothing is mine. You know, I don't want these things. So rejecting, but Prabhupada said he's a fool. Because he said, you bring me this attaché case, you know, and you bring me more and more, and I will use it in the service of Krishna. You know, so someone might think that, well, you know, Prabhupada's a very greedy man, you know, at a casual glance. But yes, Prabhupada's a greedy man, but he's greedy for Krishna. So there's a distinction of, between the materialistic conception and the actual, let's say, spiritual understanding of things, or the spiritual, let's say, experience, or the spiritual expression. So Prabhupada mentions that on all platforms of activity, the principle of sense gratification is there. But on the material platform, sense gratification is for the performer. But on the spiritual platform, sense gratification is for the transcendental senses of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the actual Bhokta. Bhoktaram jagyatapasam sarva loka maheshwaram suridam sarva bhutanam gyatvam mam shantam richchati. So the principle of sense gratification is there. So similarly, the principle of greed is there. The principle of, let's see, loving transactions are there. So when we will hear about the transcendental pastimes of Krishna, or the feelings of the gopis in their separation from Krishna, it's very important that we should try to, let's say, enter into the truth of these understanding, these ideas, or these principles. That should also be discussed to some extent. Bhakti amam avijanat yavan yaschasni tattvataha. If you want to know Krishna, if you want to know the pure devotional sentiments in relationship to Krishna, in truth, then it can only be understood through bhakti. Atak Shri Krishna namadi navave grayam indriyai. Sevan mukhi hi jivado swayam eva sparatyada. So, by the material blunt senses, one cannot understand Krishna. That is the problem with the materialist, is because their senses are not purified. They're still contaminated by false egoism, the sense of being the enjoyer. So they misconstrue everything. And similarly, the neophyte devotees have that tendency as well, the Prakriti Bhaktas. When we say neophyte devotees, we generally refer to the Karma Mishra Bhaktas, or the devotees who are still bent on, let's say, acquisition of facilities for fruit of enjoyment. And the Madhyamadikaris, as will be explained in this passage that I'll read from Bhaktivinoda Thakura's Krishna Samhita, they are comparable to the Gyan Mishra Bhaktas, who are still hung up with the deliberation on the basis of arguments and various kinds of speculations in the matter of ascertaining the truth. But devotional service is only, the absolute truth is only understandable, perceivable, penetrable via media, the process of pure devotional service, neither by Karma Mishra Bhakti, neither by Gyan Mishra Bhakti, can the absolute truth be understood. But by Shuddha Bhakti only, unalloyed devotion, unmotivated devotion, undeviated devotion. Only by undeviated devotion can I be understood as I am standing here before you, O Arjuna. Only in this way can one enter into the mystery of my understanding. So it's important for us to always reflect on this principle that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as such, He is the Supreme Enjoyer. And He can enjoy unlimitedly, without restriction, according to His own plan, according to His own design. He can create His own, let's say, pleasure pastimes, which, although apparently from the mundaner's point of view, appear to be mundane, but in actuality are the pinnacle of topmost form of liberated transcendental Vaikuntha rasa. So it's not what we're doing, but rather it's the attitude with which we're doing something. It's not what we're seeing, but it's the attitude with which we see something which is important. If our attitude is purified by cultivation of the unalloyed devotional mood, then what we see will be quite different than what the mundaner will see. So, mundane attraction between man and woman on the material platform in this material world. The material world is a perversion of the spiritual world. So as described by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, we might run into it here, that the mundane, perverted counterpart of the original spiritual form is found in the relationship between men and women in this world. But actually, the origin, as we were describing in a previous class, just like the shadow, you see my hand moving. But this has no substance, whereas the substance has some tangible reality. So similarly, the shadow of this material world, or the shadow reflection, perverted shadow reflection of this material world, has no substance and is therefore abominable, detestable. Although it's not detestable in one sense, in that it may serve to remind us of the origin. Many times we've given the example that just like if you throw a dog a bone, the dog will run after the bone. But if you throw a lion a bone, then what does the lion do? There's a difference between the way the lion responds to something and the way a dog responds to something. The dog responds by running after the bone, but the lion turns to see where the bone came from. You see, so we should not be like dogs. We should not be possessed of dog consciousness and just running after the shadow-like manifestations of this material existence, but we should see from where that shadow has come. So that shadow has come from the substantial reality in the spiritual realm. So whenever we see anything in this material realm, we should try to associate shadow-like existence with the reality of Krishna's transcendental leelas, and thus make this material realm a little less detestable than it actually is. Because if we will see something beautiful, if we see the substance in the shadow, then the shadow also becomes basically, in certain respects, non-different from the substance. And in fact, that is the principle of Yukta Vairagya. Yukta Vairagya means that we are not the possessor of anything, that nothing is meant for our sense gratification, but rather everything is meant for the pleasure of Krishna. Everything is meant for the service of Krishna. So this world is also meant for the service of Krishna, both directly and indirectly. So in this way, we should see that the activities of this material world, although they are abominable from the standpoint of the deviation from the original seva bhavana of the soul, in the matter of the pursuit of lusty affairs between men and women of this world, in reality, those same, let's say, expressions will be seen in the relationship with Krishna and the gopis. So we can, if we happen to see such things, not that we should go looking for such things, you know, to test our ability, but it's unavoidable that we will see the form of a woman, or we will see yesterday I saw, which was a little surprising to me, that there was an Indian man and woman holding hands walking on the front promenade between in front of Prabhupada's Samadhi. Because usually you don't see these things in India. You see these things in West, because it's a manifestation of the Malecha culture, or the Chandala culture, you know, that they do such things publicly, you know, as holding each other's hands or embracing each other. So you'll never see Krishna and the gopis, you know, holding each other's hands in a public forum, you know, in the presence of all the superiors and who knows who is there. So better to keep it a little hidden, you know, in order to relish the sweetness of the transcendental parakeya rasa. So anyhow, we will see in the analysis of rasa tattva, although generally we don't discuss these things, but openly, but I think most everyone here is attuned to the principle of the matter of the cultivation of bhakti. So it's not wrong to at least discuss a little something about prayojan tattva and abhideya tattva in the matter of realizing truth of our sambandha with Krishna, which ultimately has to be cultivated. Otherwise, what is the meaning of Bhagavatam class if we're not pursuing that? You know, why are we here listening if we're not interested in understanding something about the culture of bhakti yoga? So there's necessity in the matter of the delineation of the gradation of rasas, to understand how it is that it is the culture of the attitude which is important. The culture of the attitude practically is everything. As we were saying, there's not much, it is not so much what we do, but it's the attitude with which we do something. Just like we see the mundaners associating, a male form is embracing a female form, or whatever, or female form is embracing a male form. In this world, a man lives simply, you know, to be attracted by woman, and woman lives simply to be attracted by men, as Prabhupada himself says. That is the basic principle of material existence. However, the same thing we see, for example, if we climb the yoga ladder, so to speak, from baser to more elevated. Don't play mridanga now, please. Listen carefully if you want to hear something, because already there's the generated disturbance. So, in the matter of cultivation of the Madhurya Ras, because this is what we're discussing here. So anyone who's not interested in hearing any more discussion about this, you know, can take themselves anywhere they like, or they can turn off their radios or whatever, you know. But if you are listening on the radio thus far, I offer you my humble pranams and dandavats. Hare Krishna. So there's a great distinction between the various types of Madhurya Ras, as is discussed by Rupa Goswami in the Ujjvala Nilamani, wherein he delineates between what is called as Sadarani Rati. Sadarani Rati, Samjasa Rati, and what is called as Samartha Rati. Yes. So Sadarani Rati, you will find in this type of Rati or Bhava. Rati and Bhava are basically the same. Sadarani Bhav, Samjasa Bhav, and Samartha Bhav. Mood of attachment to Krishna. So, in this type of Rati, Sadarani Rati, we will see that there is the embracing of the male, Krishna, with the female form in the form of Kubja. So, that type of Rati is characterized by a type of selfish love of Godhead. So the attitude is very different than the attitude of even the devotees with Samjasa Bhav, who are the queens of Dwarka. The queens of Dwarka, they have a 50-50 let's say, desire, 50% desire for personal satisfactions in their association with Krishna, and 50% desire of the consideration of Krishna's pleasure. So the queens of Dwarka in Swakya Bhav are they're more highly elevated. It is a more highly elevated form of Madhurya Bhav. It is a more highly elevated form of Madhurya Bhav than the Sadarani Rati of Kubja, but still there is desire for personal satisfactions mixed with their interest in the matter of associating with their husband, Lord Krishna. However, the Samartha Rati of the Braja Gopis is absolutely immaculate and pure. It is what is called as Kevala Bhakti. Sri Guru Charan Padma, Kevala Bhakti Sadma. Kevala Bhakti means only bhakti, exclusively bhakti. Bhakti means devotion. There's no consideration of devotion to my own self-interest. But devotion means devotion to Krishna. Bhakti means devotion to Krishna. Bhakti doesn't mean devotion to Durga or someone like that for the purpose of fulfilling my own self-interest. Nor does it really mean devotion to Krishna for the purpose of fulfilling my own self-interest. That cannot be called as Kevala Bhakti. Bhakti means, when we say Kevala Bhakti, it means it is exclusive devotion. There's only one point of consideration, and that is Krishna's pleasure. Exclusively. There's no consideration of one's own personal happiness and distress in the matter of the cultivation of Kevala Bhakti. And it is that bhakti, Kevala Bhakti, exclusive devotion, that our Guru Varga are presenting. They're relishing themselves and presenting. And it is that form of bhakti that we are intended to get by the grace of our Guru Parampara and by the grace of Srila Prabhupada, who is our prominent representative of our Guru Parampara. So this Samartha Rati of the Braja Gopis is completely selfless. Selfless loving service. Self-giving loving service. In this Rati, we will see that there are also gradations or varieties. In this Rati, there is what is called as the Naika Bhav. Naika Bhav, Naika means heroine. Heroine can be called as a mistress of Lord Krishna. So the mistresses of Lord Krishna are generally seen to be as what are called as Yukteswaris or group leaders. Just like we have Radharani's group and we have Chandravali's group, etc. So there are many, many Yukteswaris. And generally these Yukteswaris are divided into two groups, although there are also neutral groups who sometimes side with one group or the other. But generally we will see that there are Vipaksha Gopis who are rivals, rival groups, and there are the Swapaksha Gopis or the Surinpaksha Gopis who are friendly. So in this way we can see that there are varieties of group leaders, Yukteswaris, either having a rivaling disposition toward Radharani's group or having a friendly disposition toward Radharani's group. So this kind of what is called Naika Bhav, this kind of Bhav is, let's say, possessed of an attraction to Krishna and an exclusive desire to satisfy the transcendental senses of Krishna for Krishna's pleasures alone, without considering any, let's say, attempt to any attempt for self-gratifying, let's say, endeavors. There's no question of self-gratifying endeavors, and this is called as Naika Bhav. This Naika Bhav of the Yukteswaris is the bhava which is pursued by those who come under the category of what is called Sambhog Ichcha Mayi Kamanuga Bhakti Tat Parayana let's say Keli Sambhog Ichchami Kamanuga Bhakti. So this type of bhakti, Kamanuga Bhakti, Kamanu means Raganuga Bhakti. That Anuga, or Anuga means to follow. So Kama means to follow the Kama or the Prema, the exclusive Samartha Rati of the Braja Gopis. So this is a type of Raganuga Bhakti or Kamanuga Bhakti, Madhurya Raganuga Bhakti, which is followed by those who want to become Naikas, or those who want to have a direct relationship with Krishna. But there's another type of Rati, which is in the category of Samartha Rati, as we were discussing, which is that selfless devotion. There's another type of Rati, which is called as Sakhi Bhav. Tat Bhava Ichcha Mayi. Ichcha means to have the desire to relish the bhavas of one's Yukteswari. The Yukteswari being Srimati Radharani in particular. So the Sakhis, they take more pleasure in making the arrangements
for Radharani to meet with Krishna, and they delight in relishing the happiness that Radharani experiences in her meeting with Krishna. So similarly, if Radharani makes the arrangements for anyone else to meet with Krishna by her unlimited kindness, even though they don't expect, the Sakyas don't expect any reciprocation from Krishna's side or from Radharani's side for their selfless loving services at the feet of their Yudheshwari, Srimati Radharani. They don't expect such things. They never demand it. But Radharani is so kind that she knows their heart, because after all, their heart is also possessed of this Samartha Rati, as we're discussing, that there are varieties of Samartha Rati. The one variety of Samartha Rati is this Naika Bhav. Then another variety is the Sakhi Bhav, wherein they're not so much concerned with Krishna's pleasure as they are, let's say, more concerned for the pleasure that the divine couple experience in their meeting. So in this way, there are two basic varieties of Samartha Rati. In the variety of Sakhi Bhav, which is to act as a friend of Srimati Radharani, not to act as a rival of Radharani, not to act as an independent group leader who desires independent, let's say, association with Krishna for his pleasure, but who always, as friends of Radharani, serve to help her bring about the happiness, you know, her happiness and Krishna's happiness combinedly in their divine conjugation, etc. So this Sakhi Bhav also is having different categories. So this may sound very technical, but if you can hang on to the ideas and try to understand something of it, we'll draw some nice conclusion about the thing. That is that Sakhi Bhav is having five basic categories. There are what are called as Parampreshta Sakhis. They are the Asta Sakhis of Radharani, as distinct from the Asta Gopis. Asta Gopis includes Chandravali, etc. They are the group leaders, the eight main group leaders, Radharani being the foremost. But then Radharani and each group leader, they have their eight Sakhis, eight main Sakhis. So Radharani's Sakhis, our main Sakhis, are Lalita, Vishakha, Chitra, Induleka, Champakalata, Tungavidya, Rangadevi, and Sudevi. These Asta Sakhis, they are Parampreshta Sakhis. So just like the attitude of the Sakhis are different from the attitude of the Naikas, or the heroines, group leaders. So similarly, there are differences in the attitudes of the varieties of Sakhis. So the Parampreshta Sakhis, the Asta Sakhis attitude, is one of what is called as Radha Krishna Sama Snehadika. Sama Sneha. Their affection, Sneha means affection. So their affection toward Radha and Krishna is Sama. Sama means equal. Sama Veta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. So their affection is equal. So that is a different attitude. And then there are the Priya Sakhis, who are, there are the Priya Sakhis,
who are, that reminds me, actually. The wood is probably cold, so. Yeah. Anyhow.
The Priyasakis are also possessed of this Radha Krishna Samasne Adhika attitude, although they are subordinate servants of the Astasakis. There are 64 main Priyasakis. In other words, each of the Astasakis have 8 principal Priyasakis. And they are also possessed of a similar disposition or attitude as the Astasakis themselves. But there's some difference in that they always strive to please their Gan leader. There's Yut and Gan. So there's the group, and then there's the what is called as the what is it? Group, and the Yuteshri and Gan, Yut and Gan.
Leader.
No, there's group leader, and then there's the Ganeshri. Yuteshri means the leader of the group, or the leader of the, anyway, subgroup.
I forget exactly the terminology, English terminology, which is used by Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada discusses a lot of these things in Chaitanya Charitamrita, so. But it's nicely elucidated in Ujjala Nilamani. So anyone who has a desire to more deeply understand these topics for the purpose of augmenting the personal bhajan, it is recommended that he should take shelter of the instructions given in books like Ujjala Nilamani and Jiva Dharma, etc. So, anyhow, so just as there are distinctions between the Sakis and the group leaders, so similarly, there are distinctions between the varieties of Sakis. There are varieties of Sakis, Parampreshta Sakis, Priya Sakis, and then what are called as Sakis. Sakis are, it is called as general Saki, means that they have a different mood. Although they are friends of Srimati Radharani, but, and they will never leave Radharani's group. They always hold Srimati Radharani in highest esteem. Yet, it will be seen that they have a rati which is called as a type of sneha, affection, toward Radha and Krishna, which is called Krishna asama. Asama means not equal. Krishna asama sneha. Krishna sama asama sne adhika sakis are sakis who have although they have affection for both Radha and Krishna, if they didn't have affection for Radharani, then why would they be staying? Why would they be determined to always remain in her company? But they're Krishna asamasne adhika sakis, meaning that they have more affection toward Krishna. That means that there's a little more, slightly more consideration in them for Krishna's pleasure. There's slightly more consideration for Krishna's pleasure than for than the consideration for Radharani's pleasure. So, there's a reason why I'm discussing all this, and it's because we're going to read something very nice a little hereafter that involves. If we have some little background information, it will help us to more greatly appreciate what we're going to read. So, I don't know if you can hang on to all this, because there's a lot of information, like a barrage, if it's new to you. You know, so it may be a little difficult to hang on to or grasp immediately without some more in-depth study. But anyway, I'm, kicking off the game, I guess, so to speak, by, at least punting the ball in the right direction. So anyhow, Krishna Samasneyadika, they don't have equal affection, but they have more affection, slightly more affection to Krishna, and they serve to bring about Krishna's happiness in the matter of fulfilling his desires to be associated with Srimati Radharani. And they are devotees like Kundalata is one of the most prominent we see in the pastimes of Krishna, and she will be one of the players on the stage of the performance of the pastime that we will read a little bit later. So you can remember that Kundalata is one of the Krishna Asamasne Adika Sakis of Radharani, who is trying to always trying to bring about the pleasure of Krishna by making arrangements for his meeting with Srimati Radharani. And then she's one of the general Sakis. And then there are Pran Sakis and Nitya Sakis. So the Pran Sakis and Nitya Sakis, in one place it is described that Pran Sakis are Nitya Sakis who have, for certain reasons, become more dear to Srimati Radharani than her own prana life. Shri Radhika Prana Samam Kaniya Sim. So, Kaniya Sim means that she is the younger sister of Radharani. Shri Radhika Prana Kamam Samam, the same as Radharani. Sama means the same. That she is the same as the very life breath of Srimati Radharani. Radharani sees that she's more dear to her than her own life, life's breath. Shri Radhika Prana Samam Kaniya Sim. This is a part of the prayer, the pranam mantra to Srimati Anangamanjari. So the Manjaris fall into these two categories as Pran Sakis and Nitya Sakis. So Nitya Sakis, Rupa Manjari is a Nitya Saki, Mani Manjari is a Nitya Saki, and Guna Manjari, these Mukhya Manjaris, they're all Nitya Sakis. So, and then there are Upa Manjaris. Ananga Manjari is one of the Upa Manjaris. So, anyhow, these Nitya Sakis and Pran Sakis, they have a particular type of attitude of affection toward God and Krishna, which is called as Radha Krishna, Radha Radhika Asama Sne Adhika. So although they have love for Krishna, they have a secret love for Krishna. But their love for Krishna is governed by their affection, their slightly more affection towards Srimati Radharani. So they will not do anything, just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur reiterates a point mentioned by Lord Shiva in the Sanat Kumar Samhita, which is telling that as far as the cultivation of the Radhika Asamasne Adhika type of Raganuga Bhakti, which has
or Kamanuga Bhakti in this the category of Sakhi Bhav. Bhavich Chatmika. To have the bhava of the Yuteshri, the desire to have that same bhava, or to relish the bhava within one's own self. This cultivation of the Manjari's mood, following in the footsteps of Rupa Goswami and Raghunath Das Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, the six Goswamis, as well as Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami and Lokanath Goswami. They are all Manjaris, the Asta Manjaris. So, following in the footsteps, in the matter of cultivating the type of devotional attitude which they advocate and primarily propagate, it is an essential element to understand something about that in such cultivation, that if Krishna will meet, because this is the bhav which is to be cultured by the sadhaka. It's not that you are already, you know, in the leelas of the Lord. That is a preposterous idea, to think that I'm already in the leelas of the Lord. We have not yet gone to that position as sadhakas. But the sadhaka is entitled, when he has an anxiousness and an appreciation for the dealings of Krishna and the gopis, by hearing such descriptions as we are reading presently in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam, if that attraction and appreciation is arising in the heart, and desire to also, let's say, pursue that type of devotion to the lotus feet of Krishna, to the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna, if that arises in the heart, then one certainly has the eligibility to pursue the path of this type of Kamanuga Bhajan. So, in the course of that sadhana, which is appropriately attended to for the cultivation of this type of bhava, which is commonly known as Gopi Bhava, which is a type of Madhurya Bhav, as we will, as we have discussed to some extent. Not everyone will want to cultivate this, so it is not like you know, you will eat it and you will like it, that we're trying to cram the thing down anyone's throat, but displaying it is useful and necessary, because it is meant to encourage, to show the devotees of our sampradaya, of our movement, you know, that at the feet of Srila Prabhupada, it is quite possible for us to, let's say, gain entrance into these things and actually perfect that bhava which facilitates our admittance into the leelas of Krishna, you know, in a pure transcendental spiritual body, which is befitting the fullest expression of those bhavas. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur tells that one should understand something about oneself if one is desirous to cultivate this bhava, having been so attracted, that one should understand that that he is a Braja Kishori. He, she is a Braja Kishori, about 13 years of age, and that within her heart is a secret love for Krishna. Secret love. Of course, secrets can sometimes be open secrets in the right company. So, and furthermore, there's a delineation of the Ekadasa Bhav, which is required, means there are 11 aspects to contemplate in the matter of cultivating the ideal spiritual disposition of a Braja Kishori as a maidservant of Srimati Radharani. One's name, one's bodily beauty, and all these things are there. And then furthermore, that being, one should think of oneself as belonging to the group of Nitya Sakhis. Nitya Sakhis who have this Radhika Asama Sneha. They are more attached to the consideration of Radha's pleasure than the consideration of Krishna's pleasure. And certainly they are not attached to the consideration of their own pleasure. But being more attached to the consideration of Radha's pleasure, the mood should be that if Krishna will, if you will go to take a message in your meditation on your, let's say, desires for sevas to the leelas of the Lord, if you will go to take a message to Krishna, or if you happen to be picking flowers and Krishna chances to appear on the scene, and if he will make advances toward you, you know, try to put the make on you as such, if he will suggest that come on baby, let's dance. But because after all, as mentioned by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Shishastakam, Krishna is a lampata, or a transcendental devotee. You know, so he can do whatever he wants. He is the supreme enjoyer, the supreme transcendental autocrat. And usually he gets his way, but not so fast buster, you know, is the idea. That if he expresses his desire to associate, intimately associate with you, you will not agree. You will disagree. Even you will vehemently disagree. Forget it, Buster. You know, we're not dancing tonight. You know. So like that, why? Because you belong to Srimati Radharani, and without her permission, this is how it is described by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, without her permission, you cannot do anything. Just like we are trained, from the very beginning of our devotional service, that even to take prasad, even to take rest at the end of the day, we should take permission from our guru to do any seva. We should take permission. We should take the blessings of our guru. Some people say that we are not being trained in the matter of the principles of rag bhajan. But if you're a little observant, and as you become more and more acquainted with the science of devotional service, then you'll understand that from the very beginning, we're being trained in the matter of cultivating the proper selfless devotional attitude of a Brajbasi. From the very onset of our entrance into this Krishna consciousness movement, all the elements which are required to be cultivated to actually enter into the realm of Braja as a servant, follower of one of the eternal associates of Krishna, are systematically being given to us, perhaps in not such a straightforward way, but indirectly by, instructions which may appear to be rudimentary instructions, basic instructions, just like how to honor prasad. We were discussing about the difference between the materialist eating and the devotee's eating. The difference between materialist embracing, materialistic woman embracing the form of a man, or Kubjus embracing the form of the supreme male, Krishna, or the queens embracing the attitude, or the gopis embracing. And even the Nayikas are embracing Krishna, and also the Sakis are embracing Krishna. As we've described with reference to Utfala Nilamani, there's no perceivable distinction between the desire for union with the beloved and Samartha Rati. And we've delineated the different categories within the basic category of Samartha Rati as being Nayika Bhav and the five types of Sakhi Bhav, which are also Samartha Rati. But it's a question of approach. So we are being trained imbibe the principles which form the very basis of the cultivation of that bhav. We're being trained. We're given the chance. It's a question of our receptivity. It's a question of our ability to recognize the value of what we're being given by Srila Prabhupada. So, in the cultivation of our appreciation of Krishna consciousness, as we gradually make progress in Krishna consciousness, it is very essential for us to understand and recognize, appreciate, how it is that Srila Prabhupada has been properly guiding us in the matter of the cultivation of the principles of rag bhajan from the very beginning of our devotional service. The instruction how to honor prasad is very vivid in this regard. Prabhupada says that we should honor prasad not like the materialist eating, just gorging, for gratifying the tongue and belly
and ultimately the genitals, but rather because they're in the line, straight line. If one can control the tongue, jiva vegam, if one can control this jiva vegam, the pushing of the tongue, then one can control all the senses very easily. So it is not that we gratify the tongue with the prasad. As we've discussed before, Bhaktisiddhanta says that one who has that attitude toward the Mahaprasad, that he becomes fit for another birth in this material world with which to gratify himself with the Mahaprasad. But he doesn't cultivate if he doesn't go beyond that idea of gratifying his senses with the Mahaprasad, then he doesn't actually have the spiritual disposition which merits his entrance or her entrance into the spiritual realm. So therefore, such a devotee must again take birth. And perhaps that is why 90%, as Prabhupada is told, 90% of Srila Prabhupada's followers will again have to take birth. Because they're not carefully cultivating the proper bhakti bhavana, devotional attitude, in the course of their association with the elements of this Krishna consciousness movement. They take this temple to be as a place for eating and sleeping, for one's personal comfort zone or whatever. Like this, instead of actually understanding the real internal purpose of the whole thing, to augment the proper devotional attitude, not only in ourselves, but to facilitate that increased devotional experience in others in the matter of preaching Krishna consciousness. So, rather, how to honor the prasad is that we take the prasad, and by tasting the prasad, we appreciate how Krishna has enjoyed the beautiful, how he's enjoyed the fragrance of this flower or the fragrance of this sabji or whatever. Yeah. How he's enjoyed and not only how he's enjoyed, but even more highly elevated consciousness, because to appreciate Krishna is very good, but higher than appreciating Krishna or worshipping Krishna is to appreciate or worship the devotees of Krishna. Higher than worshipping the devotees of Krishna is, or appreciating the devotee of Krishna, is to worship and appreciate the devotees of the devotees of Krishna. Das, das, anu das. Or as it translates in terms of our discussion on the cultivation of the Madhurya Ras, dasi, dasi, anu dasi. So, not only to appreciate how Krishna's tasting, but to appreciate the devotion, the dedication, the heartfelt feelings, the arduous endeavors on the part of the devotee in the matter of the manifestation of his or her expressions of her desires to please Krishna. So, moreover, to appreciate the dedication and services of they who assist. Just like someone may be cooking in the kitchen, Bhuvaneshwar is cooking in the kitchen, but it's not only that Bhuvaneshwar Prabhu is cooking in the deity kitchen, but also
There are so many others who are assisting him. He may be cooking the puris, but there's someone rolling the puris. He may be cooking the sabji, but there's someone cutting up the sabji. Like that, there's so many assistants. He may be, you know, lighting the flame, but perhaps someone else is stirring the milk to make sure it's not burning while he's turning his attention to some other prep. Like that. So, Srila Prabhupada gives us another instruction, which shows us how this same principle, which seems to be a very basic instruction in relationship to our, let's say, beginnings of Krishna consciousness, how to at least get our foot on the right footpath. Because every journey starts with this first step. So the first steps in our Krishna consciousness are very important in the makeup of the ultimate outcome, you know, or the destination in the matter of our journey back home, back to Godhead. So Srila Prabhupada, just as he's described how to honor the Mahaprasad, in the very same way, he's instructed that we offer Krishna what he likes. We offer Krishna what he likes. We don't offer Krishna what he doesn't like. You know? It's not like we're offering Krishna Hidimbi. You know? Or some Rakshashi girl. But we're offering Krishna what he likes. And Prabhupada asked, what does Krishna like? What does Krishna like? Srimati Radharani. That is what Krishna likes. The supreme personification of all bhakti. So, we offer Krishna Srimati Radharani. This is Prabhupada's very sanguine instruction to us. Beautiful instruction. We offer to Krishna Srimati Radharani. And then we relish the prasad. What an amazing instruction. What is this, Srila Prabhupada? How we relish the prasad? In the same way that he's instructed us to relish the Mahaprasad. We relish how it is that Radharani's beautiful eyes, Radharani's beautiful face, her beautiful long curly black hair, which is comparable to swarms of bumblebees, you know, swarming around the lotus of her face, etc. You know, and her beautiful other bodily features, all the way down to the delicate jewel-like toenails, that we offer all of this beauty, which is the supreme, unsurpassable, matchless beauty, even more matchless than Krishna's matchless beauty. As a matter of fact, just like Krishna is Bhushana Bhushanangam, Krishna is the ornament of all ornaments, and his transcendental beauty of his transcendental body is what makes the ornaments that he wears beautiful. So similarly, it is described by Srila Prabhupada that Krishna alone is not particularly very beautiful, but when he is surrounded by his gopi girlfriends, primarily when he is associated with Srimati Radharani, then he becomes very, very beautiful. So, Krishna is called Bhushana Bhushanangam, and in Pranaya Geet, in the chapter of the gopis' expressions of their pranay, which is
in the, it's found in the introduction to the Rasa Dance chapter, where Krishna has told them to go home, you know, and they're admonishing Krishna for being so cruel, speaking so such cruel words, out of anger toward Krishna, out of man, you know, for being so harshly treated by Krishna, like that. So they rebuke him or admonish him in that way. That's why it's called this pranayakit, because it is an expression of intensified man or jealous anger toward Krishna. So anyhow, in that gita, the gopis, they tell Krishna that you are, that please become our Purusha Bhushana. Purusha Bhushana. Bhushana, Bhushana Bhushanangam. And, so he's the ornament of all ornaments. That has two meanings. That means that Krishna beautifies the ornaments because he's the most beautiful ornament. So he beautifies the ornaments that he wears. But taken in the context of being as a Purusha Bhushana, or the male ornament, which is worn by the, let's say, you can say, by the Braja Gopis, they wear Krishna like a necklace between their beautiful raised breast. This indicates that they are, that Krishna is the Purusha Bhushana, that it is when he becomes the ornament of the gopis, then just like the it is Krishna and his sublime beauty which beautifies the ornaments that he wears. Similarly, when he becomes the ornament which is worn by the Braja Gopis, primarily by Srimati Radharani, then it is he who becomes beautified. It is not that Radharani becomes beautified, although there is a transcendental competition, but in the ultimate, essence of the competition or warring in the matter of the reciprocal expressions of cupidity in the dealings between the gopis and Krishna, it should be understood that almost invariably it is Radharani who wins. So, although Krishna sometimes wins, but that's only when Radharani allows him to win. Because after all, Krishna is called as Madan Mohan, but Radharani is called as Madan Mohan Mohini. So she is the supreme emblem of all transcendental deliciousness, you know, for the pleasure of the senses of Krishna, transcendental beauty and sweetness. So, we offer Krishna what he likes, Srimati Radharani, in all of her transcendental sweetness and beauty, and then we relish the prasad. How Krishna has enjoyed the beautiful eyes, the beautiful slender limbs. Radharani is called is Krishangi, which means she has very slender and tender limbs. So how Krishna has relished all these things in the matter of his association with Srimati Radharani. So we offer him what he likes, then we relish the prasad. What is the prasad? The prasad is Radharani. Radharani's prasad. But we don't relish like Ravana.
We don't relish like Shankasura, like we just relish. Where we just read this story of Shankasura slain by Krishna when he tried to steal Radharani and the gopis away from Krishna and Balaram who were singing. We don't relish like that any more than we're meant to. If we relish like that, then you can rest assured that we become fit for another repeated birth and death with which to go on relishing our shadow-like ghostly representations of what is, let's say, misconstrued in the matter of understanding the science of rasa tattva. So, we should certainly not relish like that, any more than the devotee is expected to relish the prasad by using the prasad, exploiting the prasad for personal material sense gratification. So we should relish the transcendental affairs of the divine meeting of Radha and Krishna, or Krishna and the gopis, you know, by trying to appreciate how it is that Krishna has enjoyed all that beauty, which is meant for his pleasure alone. And if we will do so, you know, then it may be possible for us to cultivate the disposition which merits our elevation to the plane of serving those rasas, serving that transcendental mellow in the eternal association of Krishna in his nitya lilas. So, but beyond that understanding and appreciation of how Krishna has enjoyed, we have to remember that Radharani is not alone any more than Bhuvaneshwar assisting Srimati Radharani helping her to cook nice preparations for Krishna in the deity kitchen is alone. You know, just as Bhuvaneshwar has his assistants, so Radharani has her assistants. You know, the Sakis have taken so much trouble, you know, and with so much effort, decorated Srimati Radharani in so many wonderful ways, you know, by painting pictures, you know, on her cheeks and on various other extremities of her transcendental, luscious bodily beauty. So, how much care, how much trouble, how much, you know, it's just like when Radharani and the Sakis go to meet with Krishna, and then sometimes it is seen, we will take a little look at that in a couple of minutes. It's getting later and later, but anyhow, you're still here, so I guess you don't mind missing prasad. But when Radharani and Krishna meet with Radharani and the Sakis meet with Krishna, then because the Sakis have taken so much trouble to decorate Radharani and make her just so wonderfully beautiful and sweet, just because they know that you know Krishna's going to see her and become overwhelmed with ecstatic emotions, and that will serve to fulfill all of Srimati Radharani's innermost heartfelt desires for the Prem Keli. So, not for her pleasure, but because she knows that no one can satisfy Krishna like she can satisfy Krishna. So therefore, all the Sakis know that her transcendental beauty, let's say, being immaculately enhanced by their devotional endeavors,
although it is mentioned that although it's saying that are there not people who are offering ghee lamps to the sun, to the sun god? So offering ghee lamps to the sun god, you know, what is the meaning? You know, the sun is already unlimitedly bright, yet there are people who are offering ghee lamps to the sun. You know, the ghee lamp is a very little flame, you know, but yet they're offering ghee lamps to the sun, you know, and in its own right, it serves to beautify the whole situation. So similarly, although the soles of the tender lotus feet of Srimati Radharani are like reddish lotus petals, yet still, although there's no need to apply any lac mineral pigment, red colored mineral pigment to the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani, still the Sakis, they serve to enhance her beauty, just like she has beautiful reddish bimba fruit lips, yet they enhance the beauty by offering her pan, so that the pan juice comes onto her lips and makes her beautiful bimba fruit lips all the more beautiful. And so although she doesn't require any ornaments to be beautiful, still they beautify her with ornaments and with various musk paintings, etc., on her face and limbs, like that. So so all these things are meant to give expression, because ultimately Krishna's not just going to notice. Krishna's not just going to notice the beauty of Srimati Radharani, but he's going to notice that it's going to come to him that how she has been so beautified by all these nice decorations. Certainly, she didn't do all this by herself. So therefore, it may be, let's say, concluded that Krishna also recognizes the endeavors of Radharani's friends, and therefore wants to, as Srimati Radharani so desires it, he also wants to reward them for their services in his own way. So like this, we can appreciate that as Radha and the Sakis proceed toward the forest of Cupid, and then in the Kunjas of Braja, so and Krishna sees all this immaculate beauty of Srimati Radharani and begins to make his divine, transcendental, you can say super mundane advances towards Srimati Radharani. You know, the Sakis, they admonish Krishna, saying, why are you even thinking to dare to mess up all of our nice decorations that we've spent so much trouble? Of course, the nice decorations were meant for his pleasure, but so it's just like, it's kind of like, you know, a mundane example can be given that someone in the West, you know, there's this Christmas, I don't know whether it's, but in America anyway, there's a Christmas tree, and Santa Claus brings presents, you know, but actually it's the mother or the father or the brother or the relative or someone, you know, who has so nicely wrapped this present, you know, and here comes the pranky boy coming along, you know, on Christmas morning, you know, and sees the presents, and oh, it has his name on it, and rip, 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 you know, and immediately all that trouble, you know, within a second, you know, of nicely wrapping the present, you know, and we question whether he even appreciated it, you know, because if he really appreciated it, perhaps he wouldn't have, torn the cloth, or let's say,
you know, messed up all the dolphins that we so carefully painted, or kissed the mustache off of her cheek. You know, we placed the mustache, you know, mustache so nicely on her cheek, you know, but just to enchant him and to enhance his desires for his pleasure pastimes. But here he is, he's gone and kissed it off, you know. So many times, you know, the Manjaris, they will very boldly and arrogantly, they will say, you stop this nonsense, you rascal, you know. We've taken so much trouble, you know, how dare you? And they make it impossible for him to actually have the chance to relish that transcendental present. They're offering him a transcendental present, you know, not exactly a Christmas present, but a Krishna's present. Krishna's present. So anyhow, like that, Srila Prabhupada has given us a wealth of instruction, which is ultimately meant to prepare us to enter into the relishment of the beauty and sweetness of Braja Bhakti, and anyhow, I was going to read some things here from Krishna Samhita, but I think I'll skip this one. I'll skip it. And I'll go to yes, okay. This is some oh wait. Some very anyway, I'm not going to go into it very, very much. It's describing how it is that that it's necessary to. He says many nice things, but he makes a point. I'll just try to let's say summarize the idea. He's describing how it is that the
here it is.
The necessity of the sadhaka. Yes. He's describing the necessity of the sadhaka hearing about the pastimes of Krishna. Of course, when we say sadhaka, we mean those who are seriously pursuing the path of anukul bhajan. Anukul means activities or worship which is favorable for the cultivation of Braja Bhakti, particularly, as we're discussing. So,
This is near the summary of his Chaitanya Shikshamrita from by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Attain the highest stage by deciding your present qualification. You know, how many of us are how qualified anyway? You know, so we have to decide our present qualification, and then attain the highest stage by deciding your present qualification, practicing yukta vairagya, and by constantly chanting the name, the holy names. After understanding the topic of rasa, and rasa can only be understood, you know, by associating with pure devotees. There's no question of understanding rasa, you know, by associating with mundane, externally oriented materialistic people or even materialistic devotees. Rasa must be understood from sampradaya, from guru parampara. If it is not understood from guru parampara or sampradaya, it is not understood. So it is necessary, though, to advance in spiritual life, it is absolutely essential to understand the science of rasa. Because without understanding the science of rasa, there's every chance that a practicing devotee will again fall down to the material platform. So, he's saying, after understanding the topic of rasa and taking support of the activity, service, and mood suitable to the self, because every individual will have a particular mood of devotion toward Krishna in one of the five rasas, either in Shanta, Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, or Madhurya Ras. So whichever rasa, whichever mood, whichever bhav is suitable to oneself, by taking shelter of that, the devotee should enter the meditation on the eightfold pastimes of Krishna, called as Astakalya Lila. One might say that this, you know, has to be done at a particular stage, and of course it is recommended that this should be done at the stage wherein one is purified in his hearing, and which is characterized by his ability to recognize within himself his own individual inclination toward a particular bhav or toward a particular mood in one of the five rasas. So when someone is recognized, when a devotee, a sadhaka, practicing devotee, not a perfect devotee, but a practicing devotee, has recognized within him or herself the a particular inclination, then it's possible to take shelter of that, of the activities and service and mood suitable to the self, so in such a way enter the meditation of the eightfold pastimes. We should understand that it is not possible to enter. There's no question of artificially entering into the meditation of the eightfold pastimes, but rather that meditation is a consequence of having sufficiently heard these pastimes. By hearing and chanting the pastimes of Krishna in the association of like-minded devotees, it may be possible for the smarana
to become manifest. Shravanam Kirtanam Krishna Smaranam. So Shravanam Kirtanam, or Radha Krishna Smaranam, Leela Smaranam. It is not possible. Shravanam in Kirtanam culminates in Smarana. And therefore, conversely, it should be understood that Smarana is the outcome of proper Shravana and Kirtana, hearing and chanting about Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes. With right understanding, in the association of the devotees coming in the Vaishnava Sampradaya. So, then very easily, by meditating on these eightfold pastimes, the devotees will very easily attain Vastu Siddhi. So Vastu Siddhi means the ultimate outcome, or entering into the spiritual pastimes of Krishna in a spiritual body. Vastu means substantial, spiritual body. By practicing Yukta Vairagya, the devotees can easily remain Paramahamsas till the end of their material lives. So you cannot remain Paramahamsa until you at least first become Paramahamsa. So there's a process by which one can become Paramahamsa. And so as there's a process by which one can easily attain Vastu Siddhi, and a process by which one can easily remain Paramahamsas till the end of their material body, etc., one can so also there's a process by which we can become Paramahamsas. Prabhupada wanted us to become Paramahamsas. It's not that Paramahamsas is for the other guy. He wants us to become Paramahamsas, every one of us. So we have to, you know, do the needful. Krishna consciousness means doing the needful, Prabhupada said. So that's the main needful. The main needful is to ourself become advanced in Krishna consciousness, so that we can hope to go back home, back to Godhead. If we remain in our mediocrity, then how can we hope to go back home, back to Godhead? So we have to intensify our bhajan, so as to become Paramahamsas by doing what the Paramahamsas do. Doing what the Paramahamsas do. It's not so difficult thing. What it means to follow in the footsteps of the Brajvasis. It's mentioned by Srila Prabhupada in the 47th chapter of the Krishna book. He says that this prayer of the inhabitants of Vrindavan is the super excellent type of self-realization. The method is very simple. To fix the mind always on Krishna. Of course, it's simple for the simple. So it depends on how simple you are. Whether you have other things on the agenda, you know, or whether you're simply interested in advancing in Krishna consciousness. So the method is very simple. To fix the mind always on the lotus feet of Krishna. To talk always of Krishna without passing on to any other subject matter. And to engage the body in Krishna's service constantly. This is the method. It is very simple. If you want to follow in the footsteps of the Brajvasis so as to become natural Paramahamsas, there's a natural way to do it. A very easy, simple method of doing it. And that is to always think of Krishna and to always talk about Krishna without passing on to any other subject matter, and to always engage one's body, mind, and words, you know, in Krishna's service. So that is the method. So you want to do that, you say you want to follow in the footsteps of the gopis, then let's see how much you really want to follow in the footsteps of the gopis by whether or not you're always talking of Krishna without passing on to any other subject matter. That will be the mark of whether or not you're actually serious about, you know, everyone's claiming, you know, Raganuga Bhakti, Raganuga Bhakti. Everyone's talking about Raganuga Bhakti. Not everyone, but, you know, a good number of people are talking about Raganuga Bhakti and all these things. But let's see whether you're really interested in Raganuga Bhakti. Because if you're really interested in Raganuga Bhakti, Raganuga Bhakti means to follow in the footsteps of the Brajbasis. Not only Anusharan, but in certain respects also Anukarana. Anukarana means to follow those activities. Following the generally it's recommended Anusharana means to follow or to surrender to the instructions. But Anukarana is also there. But one will follow the activities which are in accord with their instructions. In other words, if a great soul will deviate from, his own instructions by performing any activity, that activity you shouldn't follow. But when he exemplifies his instructions by his activities, then that activity you follow. So the instruction is to always chant about, hear and chant about Krishna's pastimes, etc., without falling, without passing on to any other subject matter throughout one's entire day and night. That is the instruction, and it is the practical example which has been set by the gopis as what we are discussing here in the pages of Bhagavatam today. They spent 9 hours, you know, discussing Krishna Katha in the presence of Mother Yasoda before they, you know, became too agitated and got up and went out on the pretext of collecting flowers to search out for Krishna, to understand why he's delayed in his coming home, etc. So we should also, if we're really serious, you know, about going back home, back to Godhead, about attaining the realm of Braja, about serving Radha and Krishna in their intimate leelas, then this is how to do it. Let's see how serious you are. You know, let's see how much time you spend talking about other things. You know, then we can see how serious you really are. Always thinking of Krishna, always talking about Krishna, you know, always engaging one's body, mind, and words in the service of Krishna, you know, then we can see, oh, this person is actually, he's following in the footsteps of the Brajagopis, of the Brajvasis, you know. So in that way, we can understand, you know, to elevate oneself to the position of Paramahansa. You know, so that we can actually become eligible to, attain the fruit of our bhajan in the matter of entering into the leelas in our Satchitananda Vastu, Siddhadeha, eternal spiritual body as a gopi or a gopa. Because after all, we're not these bodies. We're not these material bodies. Wake up, Brajananda, or go take rest. Nice that you're sitting here, but you should wake up since you're bothering to be here. You should also hear something. So anyhow, there's something more, a little more. People who have materialistic devotees. Bhaktivinoda Thakur here is saying people who have strong attraction for gross material pleasure and cannot understand these topics. This is concerning the reading of the Astakalya Leelas, please. We're not discussing the reading of Bhagavatam. We're discussing the reading of Astakalya Leela or that anyhow, that they should not read, think of, or discuss these topics of rasa. Because, why? This is the most important, the foremost important reason why they should not read or think of or discuss these topics of rasa as found in the Astakala Lila Granths. Why? Because they will think that these topics are all material activities and commit offense by criticizing them. Because they'll criticize Krishna, like Shishupal. Therefore, they should not hear. And then he goes further to say that if they do appreciate them at all, they'll appreciate them in a material way, not in a spiritual way, because they've not been sufficiently trained to understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Enjoyer, you know, the absolute autocrat, you know, etc. They've not understood that he's the source of everything that exists. So they have no eligibility to penetrate and even grasp to the slightest degree the true meaning of the thing. So they should not hear, because if they do appreciate, they will take it materially, and which means, as it's discussed here, they will imitate, they will think to imitate the controller. They'll think to imitate the controller or the behavior of ruling personalities, as is described in 10th canto, 33rd chapter, text number 30, that we've previously read, that, you know, one should not imitate, just like if one foolishly tries to drink an ocean of poison like Lord Shiva had done, then he'll immediately be destroyed. So similarly, one should not imitate the activities of the Param Purush, or the Supreme Enjoyer. So, but because one will take it materially, if one is, too much attraction for gross material pleasure, and is too much bodily absorbed, out of false ego, he will misunderstand the things, and he will become degraded as sahajiyas. Just like the sahajiyas, they do rasa lila, you know, with young girls and other men's wives and this and that, you know, taking themselves to be one with Krishna, etc., which is a totally misconceived, you know, or misunderstanding of the pure transcendental reality of Krishna's pleasure dalliances with the gopis. So, Jayadev Goswami has written in Gita Govinda that if, on this condition, if the mind absorbed in rasa is fixed in remembrance of Krishna, then if the person is desirous of hearing about the highest pastimes of the Lord, then, please listen to the sweet love songs of Jayadev Goswami. So, it's to be understood that these topics are really reserved for the topmost devotees, the Premika Bhaktas, because they can actually serve the topics. Whereas others may misconstrue and do a disservice by either criticizing or inappropriately applying the ideas to their own false egoistic conceptions of themselves. So then he goes on further, Bhaktivinoda goes on further to say that Mahaprabhu has instructed that the devotees should listen carefully to the pastimes of the Lord in the Bhagavatam. By this, the supreme rasa will manifest. The last verse of the four essential verses, chapter sloki, of the Bhagavatam says, a person who is searching after the supreme absolute truth. So is there anyone here who is not searching after the absolute truth? Who is not sincerely searching after the absolute truth? Is there anyone here that cannot accept that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? A person who is searching after the absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, Krishna, must certainly search for it up to this, in all circumstances, in all space and time, all circumstances. He must search in every circumstance. If he's actually interested in searching after the absolute truth, it will be understood that he's searching after the absolute truth. The mark of his sincerity will be that he's searching after the absolute truth in all circumstances, in all space and time, and both directly and indirectly. In other words, his life is nothing but a search for the absolute truth. If he's concerned with pursuing his relative relative so-called truths of family, society, friendship, and love, independently of his search for the absolute truth, then we should understand that he is not, let's say, a fit candidate for receiving this instruction. But if a person is searching after the absolute truth, he's saying that such a person must certainly search for it up to this in all circumstances, in all space and time, and both directly and indirectly. So when we talk about such a person, it means that he is a serious sadhaka. Someone who's searching after the absolute truth is either a siddha or he's a serious sadhaka. Serious sadhakas, or practicing devotees, who spend their whole time, day and night, absorbed in the practices of favorable devotional cultivation, these persons must, in all time and circumstance, in all space and time, he said, in all circumstances, in all space and time, and both directly and indirectly, search for the absolute truth. So, the highest knowledge is prema. That is the highest knowledge is described in Bhagavad Gita as let's say being, what is it? I can't remember the Sanskrit. You're saying this Raja Vidya Raja Guyam shloka. Pratyaksa Bhagavan, what is it? Pratyaksa Svagam. I can't read. My tongue is
Yes, yeah, so sukham kartham avyayam. Yeah. So that's why I don't read the Sanskrit sloka usually, because I have trouble reading the Sanskrit. Anyhow, this knowledge, the king of education, the most secret of all secret, this knowledge is the knowledge of prema. Prema is that knowledge that is being discussed, and prema means prema bhakti. So it is the purest knowledge, and because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, it is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting and joyfully performed. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, here in this book, he advocates that one should, try to understand, the pastimes of Krishna through the process of samadhi. And samadhi means that subtle process by which one can gain a perception, a true perception of the inner self, or the spirit soul, one's own, what is it? Jivasya tattva jigyasu. This is another point. The same point, actually, where in Bhagavatam it is mentioned that kamasya na indriya pritir labho jiveta yavata. He says that life's desires should not be aimed at sense gratification, but one should live a healthy life, because this life gives us a chance to inquire, to search for the absolute truth, to search about the truth, jivasya tattva. To understand the truth about the jiva's eternal relationship with Krishna. Jivasya tattva jigyasu narto yas cheha karmavi. There should be no other goal to any of our activities. Whether it's eating, sleeping, mating, or defending, or whatever it may be, whatever activities that we're doing, there should be no other goal to that activity than the search for the absolute truth. Therefore, it doesn't matter which ashram one is in. It doesn't matter which condition of life one is in. But that search should be there. When the search is there, and when those activities are in pursuit of that search for the absolute truth, you know, then one is said to be engaged in the process of samadhi, searching after the absolute truth, searching after the truth about the jiva, by which performing that activity by which the truth of the jiva can be perceived by realization, that is called as bhakti. Bhaktiya mam abhijananti yavan chasmi tatpataha. That one can know Krishna in truth by bhakti. So in this way, he recommends that it is only by bhakti, by engaging in devotional service, that one can understand these pastimes. So to be a serious sadhaka means that one, in all circumstances, in all space and time, both directly and indirectly, not that one is, casually, that sometimes I'll dabble in bhakti, but then on with life's business of eating, sleeping, and mating, defending, as if eating, sleeping, and mating, defending will be in the forefront. Put the horse before the cart. You know, it means that bhakti should be in the forefront. And any eating, sleeping, mating, and defending that we must do, if we must, you know, should be done following the principles of bhakti, in pursuit of bhakti. Then they become favorable. So the highest knowledge is prema. This is revealed in two ways in the activities of Krishna. Two ways this highest knowledge is revealed. This is with reference to this verse that we just quoted about the person searching in all circumstances and all times, both directly and indirectly. So directly, this knowledge of prema is revealed, is obtained through the daily pastimes or the eightfold pastimes
Astakalya Lila. Indirectly, it is obtained through the pastimes of Krishna killing the demons, from the killing of Putana to the killing of Kamsa. These pastimes exist symbolically in Braja and only as impressions in Golok. Actually, the pastimes of killing the demons, etc., which are called Naimittika Lila, they are only found in Golok. They are not found in Golok and cannot exist there. Reading the indirect pastimes, the devotee can purify himself. Being fully purified, he can taste the direct pastimes and perceive Golok. If the aspirant for prema, is there anyone here who is not an aspirant for prema? Anyone amongst us is not an aspirant for prema? So he says that if the aspirant for prema very carefully cultivates in this way, that is, taking advantage of, aspirant means that he doesn't have prema yet, but he's aspiring to prema. He's concerned only with prema dharma, either as a bhavuka or as a jataruchi, or as a sadhaka, a serious sadhaka, madhyam adhikari, particularly, it should be said, even if, let's say, so these are aspirants of prema. If the aspirant of prema very carefully cultivates in this way, by hearing both the direct, by searching out the absolute truth, which is the highest knowledge of prema, by searching after prema, both directly by hearing the Astakalya Leelas of Krishna, and also indirectly by hearing the pastimes of Krishna's killing the demons, etc., he will understand all these matters very clearly. Srimad Bhagavatam says, expert and thoughtful men relish Srimad Bhagavatam, the mature fruit of the desire tree of Vedic literatures. It emanated from the lips of Sri Shukadeva Goswami. Therefore, this fruit has become even more tasteful, although its nectarine juice was already relishable for all, including the liberated souls. So all is including, when he says all including the liberated souls, it implies that all, there would be no need for him to say including the liberated souls if the word all didn't also include the non-liberated souls. So, he goes on further to say that as long as it is necessary to cultivate indirectly for purification, in other words, as long as one is not yet completely freed from anarthas, then it is necessary to cultivate indirectly by hearing the pastimes of Krishna's killing the demons, etc. The devotee, as long as it is necessary to cultivate indirectly for purification, the devotee cannot absorb himself in full rasa. The devotee cannot absorb himself in full rasa as long as there are anarthas plaguing the heart. And mind you, the anarthas will continue all the way up until the time that you have a spiritual body and are associating directly with Krishna in his Bhauma Leelas. The anarthas are not absolutely eradicated until that time. So therefore, We should not think that it is possible for us to relish, fully relish rasa until we get our spiritual bodies and are actually engaged in the transcendental pastimes of Krishna. But it doesn't mean that we cannot relish rasa at all. But we cannot fully relish rasa until that time. As long as it is necessary to cultivate indirectly for purification. So it means that the sadhaka, Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bo, it means that the sadhaka is, and even the siddha, they also require to cultivate the indirect process of hearing about Krishna's pastimes of his killing the demons, etc. Although they may focus more on the pastimes of Krishna's, let's say, intimate love exchanges with his devotees in the Nityalilas, but it is necessary for all classes who have not yet attained the highest perfection of Vastu Siddhi to hear both the pastimes of Krishna's eightfold daily exploits and also his killing of the demons. But it should be understood also that the lower you are, you know, in the ascent to the terrace of prema, the more necessary it is for you to hear the Naimittika Leelas or the pastimes of Krishna's killing the demons and such things, and the less necessary it is for you to hear about the pastimes of Krishna's reciprocation of love with his devotees in Braja. So he goes on further. When the indirect cultivation bears fruit, that means when hearing of the pastimes of Krishna's killing of the demons, etc., bears fruit, then what is the fruit? Anartanavritti is the fruit. Okay, so when the indirect cultivation bears fruit, the pure rasa of Golok will manifest. Until attaining the stage of rasa for Krishna, however, it is necessary to cultivate until attaining, this is an important point, so that's why I'm reading it again, until attaining the stage of rasa for Krishna, however, it is necessary to cultivate, will you please, to cultivate devotional service through both direct, in other words, the Astakalya Leela, hearing of the Astakalya Leela, and indirect pastimes of killing the demons. So it's not that just because there are nartas in the heart, so we have to hear the pastimes of Krishna killing the demons to clear away the anartas, that we should only, we have no right to hear the other pastimes, and we should only hear the pastimes, we should only engage in the indirect pursuit of prema or anartanavritti. Anartanavritti, anartanavritti, nivritti, nivritti, anarta, anarta. You know, what are we, you know, what are we doing anyway? Are we meant to only practice, you know, the anartanavritti by hearing the pastimes, the indirect pastimes of Krishna? But no. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is telling that as long as the stage of rasa for Krishna has not been attained, until that time, it is necessary to cultivate devotion through both direct and indirect pastimes of Krishna. So both pastimes of Krishna, that means the Astakalya Leela pastimes, if one is seriously cultivating, if one is pursuing the absolute truth, you know, if one is a serious sadhaka, sincere devotee, then he must cultivate both directly. He must search out for prema directly and indirectly, by hearing both the Astakaliya Leela pastimes, or the intimate pastimes as we've heard about Krishna's Rasa Leelas in Srimad Bhagavatam, and his dealings with the gopis, as we're hearing now. These are intimate expressions, such expressions that we heard today, that thus we gopis, who become agitated by Cupid when Krishna playfully glances at us, stand as still as trees, unaware that our hair and garments are slackening. Our hair and garments slackening. This is an intimate expression, you know, which indicates their, you know, intimates their desires for love sporting with Krishna, etc. So in this way, it is to be understood that we are to cultivate both directly and indirectly. Upon remembering the daily pastimes, the devotee will taste rasa, and tasting the various other pastimes, he will be able to destroy the obstacles to tasting the rasa. In other words, it is not that it's impossible to taste rasa. You know, we taste rasa by the grace of these pastimes, which have been coming, you know, via media, the Kripa Shakti of Krishna, coming down through disciplic succession, we get opportunity to be associated with that which is Rasa Vaisaha, Krishna himself. This, Prabhupada has told in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam that one can get all the benefit that one could expect to get by direct association with Krishna, by associating with these words in glorification of Krishna's pastimes found in the Srimad Bhagavatam. That's a paraphrase. So, it is not that we can't, but it's to be understood that if our mentality is not, let's say, properly directed under the instruction of Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu, then it can hardly be expected that we can relish rasa. Actually, only the premika bhaktas can truly relish rasa. But we can taste something. We can begin to experience the attractiveness of Krishna's leelas through the realm of braja, etc. By availing ourselves to the mercy manifestations of Krishna's pastimes as found in our acharya's literatures. And upon being attracted, as a matter of fact, it is that attraction alone which makes it possible. Ultimately, it is that attraction. Simply hearing the killing of the demons without hearing these pastimes which attract our heart to Krishna, will be insufficient. In other words, it is not enough to simply cultivate the indirect pursuit of prema by hearing the pastimes which help to clear away the anartas, but it is absolutely essential to simultaneously hear the pastimes of Krishna's pleasure dalliances with his devotees in order to, let's say, awaken the attraction which makes it possible for us to want to kick away all the impediments to our progress to the terrace of prema. So he says, upon remembering the daily pastimes, the devotee will taste rasa, and tasting the various other pastimes, he will be able to destroy the obstacles to tasting rasa. Then, when the material gunas have disappeared, in other words, all this is done before the material gunas have disappeared, please. In order for the material gunas to disappear. Then, when the material gunas have disappeared, the devotee will easily attain the vision of Golok, even within this world. So, anyhow, there's a little more. We'll try to stop before Artik. Otherwise, they'll have to ring the little bell. Anyhow. Hare Krishna. So, I'm going to boldly, although I'm sure that some of my watchdog-like God brothers and God sisters, you know, may, let's say, criticize me, but I'm going to boldly read something which should serve to at least tantalize our transcendental taste buds, if we have any at all, awakening, you know, on our... Hare Krishna. We are simply picking a single flower to serve the sun god. Why are you so shameless and selfish that you wish to stop us? My dear celibate brahmachari, you have no business in this flower garden where young girls play. Leave this place. Return to your cowherd friends and protect the Sarabi cows as they eat the fresh grasses of Braja. This is Radharani speaking. Upon meeting Krishna, they have some little tussle, you know, in the beginning of their meeting. So Krishna's forbidding them and giving up so many reasons why they shouldn't be picking his flowers. And Radharani is telling, wait a minute, you're saying they're your flowers, but I say that this is my pastime forest, you know, which was given to me by Brindadevi. You know, who are you to stop us? You know, and we're picking a single flower to serve the sun god. So why are you so shameless and selfish that you wish to stop us? As Radharani spoke, the Chakora bird of Lord Hari eagerly drank the flood of nectarine joking words flowing from Radharani's cooling, beautifully smiling, moon-like face. As the Chakora bird Hari drank, the Chakora birds of the gopis' eyes showed signs of dissatisfaction. In other words, they're not... These are signs of dissatisfaction because they saw that Krishna was becoming a little absorbed, you can say, in the beauty of Radharani. So they're showing dissatisfaction because they know what is impending as a result of his such absorption. This kind of dissatisfaction is transcendental dissatisfaction, which is not exactly dissatisfaction. The real meaning of this dissatisfaction is satisfaction. But it is expressed as dissatisfaction. Srimati Radharani proceeded to decorate the neck of her lover Krishna with a garland of blue lotus flowers of her sidelong glances. She became afraid that Krishna might touch her. Remember, we're talking about our Radha Shyam Sundar that we see every day when we're speaking these things. And expressed her contempt for him. This shows the sweet, crooked dealings of Srimati Radharani and her gopis with Krishna. Although there's no such real contempt in her heart. But she's expressing contempt. Just like, you know, one time Radharani and Krishna were playing dice and the prize was that the winner got to kiss the cheek of the loser. And so Radharani lost the game. So
was it? No, no. Krishna lost the game. And it was Radharani who was supposed to kiss the cheek of Krishna. So Krishna tells to Radharani that, okay, you've won. So now come and collect your prize by kissing my cheek. And Radharani, she goes, ooh, you know, like, you know, who would want to do that, you know? So she's saying like that, but actually, you know, of course she naturally, you know, would like to do that, but just for fun. Now, because, you know, these pastimes go on for eternity, so there's ample opportunity. So why not have some fun, you know, of, let's say, manifesting a contrary Vama mood. So anyhow, where were we? Yeah, this is... So they manifest dissatisfaction. The gopis' eyes manifested dissatisfaction upon seeing Krishna's eyes drinking the beautifully smiling moon-like face of Srimati Radharani. Srimati Radharani proceeded to decorate the neck of her lover Krishna with a garland of the blue lotus flowers of her sidelong glances. She became afraid that Krishna might touch her, and expressing her contempt for him within a wordless breath, you know, she turns around. She playfully turned as if to leave his company at once. The transcendental body of his beloved Radharani was like a wonderful dancer performing before Lord Krishna. By seeing her, he became agitated with amorous longings, and he again grasped the edge of her sari. Hare Krishna. These pastimes should never be misunderstood by trying to place the material conception of mundane, lusty affairs between the men and women of this world upon them. So, Srimati Radharani bent the bow of her eyebrows and attacked her beloved Krishna with the arrows of glances from the reddened corners of her eyes. She pierced the armor of his peaceful composure and repeatedly struck him with the toy lotus flower in her hand. Struck by Radharani's lotus, Lord Krishna became filled with transcendental bliss. Indeed, he was not able to measure the intense happiness that filled his transcendental body. His transcendental body, the resting place of numberless universes. It's interesting how Kaviraj Goswami interjects that. The resting place of innumerable universes. This is to bring back, you know, into proper focus the truth that Krishna is not just an ordinary person, and that his pastimes are not ordinary lusty affairs, but rather he is the source of everything that exists, and therefore, and the supreme controller, the supreme enjoyer, and as such, he has rights like no other to enjoy such pastimes with his devotees, which are all expressions of selfless, reciprocal service between Godhead and his devotees. I have to speak a little something like this under the circumstances. Out of ecstatic happiness, he trembled, perspired, shed tears, and the hairs of his body stood erect. The touch of Lord Krishna caused Srimati Radharani's transcendental body to blossom up with happiness. The knot holding her bodice became loose. Of course, we're just like we're mentioning here today, how when Krishna pierced the gopis with his sidelong glances, that the garlands in their hair became loose, and their braids began to automatically loosen, because actually only the husband has the right to loosen the braid of the wife. So as Krishna is the supreme husband of every living entity, and particularly he's the supreme husband of the transcendental entities who are serving him in the Madhurya Ras, in the form of gopis, he has every right to do the needful in the matter of loosening their braids and garments, etc., which are all transcendental expressions of pure spiritual quality. So, the knot holding her bodice became loose. Her silken undergarment began to slip, and the lower part of her body began to perspire. When Srimati Radharani saw the smiles of her amused gopi friends, she became embarrassed, and her eyes moved restlessly. As she struggled to protect herself from Lord Krishna's hand, her sari and garments began to fall. Although ordinarily very expert, she became bewildered and unable to protect herself. Lord Krishna then began the jubilant festival of Cupid. These things are actually a little, perhaps, too intimate to read under the circumstances. So, in spite of the fact that I want to go on for the benefit of the, or and for the pleasure of the Anuragi Vaishnavas, I think that it's probably better that that I cease and desist. Go with Premanandi Hari Hari Bol. Anyway, thank you very much for tolerating my existence.